This is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor. Zorba through the hour, talking with you about what's new in healthy living, sharing some down-to-earth advice, and some great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. Do you have a question for Zorba? Then give us a call right now at 1-800-462-7413. Along with your calls, each time we're here, some interesting research.
Yes. How do you tell your honey that she should be on or he should be on a diet?
Uh-oh.
What's the right way to approach that? Very complicated, touchy subject, if you will.
And
how about working beyond retirement? Here it is. You go and you retire and then you work. Is that good for you, bad for you, good for your health, bad for your health? In these economic times, it's a major question.
Well, I always thought it was obviously good to keep on working forever. You and I are going to work forever, aren't we?
I ain't stopping. Not me. No way.
What's
no
our
way.
Recipe?
Lisa's vegetable pancakes. Something that you might not think is great for breakfast, but certainly something that might be great for brunch.
And don't forget about our medical myth buster coming up later in the hour. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. And a listener now, Zorba, in Madison, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hello.
What's up?
Well, I have had plantar fasciitis for over 10 years and have done virtually everything to help it except surgery. So I know I have to live with it. I'm just wondering if there's any new research, new anything to help.
Now, what started this? Any idea?
I'm constantly on my feet as I'm in my 40s now, but ever since, 16, I've been waitressing or, bartending, college.
So nothing. I mean,
running.
A lot of people are on their feet doing things. There was no injury that began it. So.
I wore high heels all the time, though, as well.
When running, you wore high heels?
No. That I have not done. I didn't treat my feet well. But then I did a couple marathons, and that's when I really knew
something
was wrong.
So maybe marathons were in there. Now, what, on a scale of 1 to 10, when it first started, how would you have rated it?
When it first started?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, maybe 5 or 6.
Okay, and how about now?
It depends. If I wear heels or if I don't stretch.
Why do you wear heels?
If I go out to dinner.
Nope.
I know.
How about barefoot?
I try not to.
How much do you actually go barefoot? Do you go barefoot around the house?
No, I had some Birkenstocks formed to my foot.
Mm-hmm. How about in the shower?
Yeah.
You go barefoot in the shower. Okay. I just want to get some things out. Out of the shower, do you always wear shoes? Other than when you shower or bathe, how often do you not wear shoes?
Summertime probably 50%.
No.
Wintertime, probably 90%.
I just hit a number of things that you are doing wrong.
Okay.
You are a shoe wearer 100% of the time. 100%. 100%.
Not in the shower.
In the shower, you put on your Crocs, you go in your shower and you shower. Now, you can decide to take the Crocs off for part of it, but when you're not washing your feet, the Crocs go back on. 100% of the time. Not 50, not 75, not 80, 100% of the time. Major issue. Not minor. Major issue with that. You are not ever to be without a good-fitting shoe, something of a Croc nature or an athletic shoe. When you go out, it's flats. It's never heels for the rest of your life. Never heals. Well, you want to be out of pain. Now, maybe 2 years from now, 1 or 2 years from now, you may say, okay, I'm going to try a heel. You can't do it. It's a disability. So you should never, ever wear heels. You have to wear something else to look sexy. But you can't wear heels. You can't do it. And people, it's a hard thing. But those are major issues. And what's happening, you're re-irritating the plantar fascia when you don't wear shoes and when you wear heels. I know. It's problematic. Every time I had plantar fasciitis, and I hated it when I had to give up my heels. I just found I just didn't look the same when I went out to eat. But you can't. You've got to wear fashionably old lady shoes.
I've got to say, you're calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Wisconsin.
Yes.
You're the only person in Madison, Wisconsin who wears heels.
That's right. It's the politically right place. No one will ever question that you're wearing athletic shoes in Madison, Wisconsin, ever. They'll say, nice shoes. Where'd you get them?
Yeah.
In fact, buy expensive ones. Go out and buy $200 athletic shoes so they are really nice. Or maybe ones with sparkles on them. Go for the fancy ones. But seriously, go there. You've got to have. Those are major, major issues.
Okay.
Next question. Have you taped your foot?
I have had them taped. I have not done it myself. I do know how.
That's the next thing.
Okay.
I highly recommend taping. Old Dr. Kellogg always taught me about taping. We'll put it on our website.
Okay.
We'll have a nice little nifty link for it on our website at zorbapastor.org.
Okay.
Tape your feet, and you leave them taped, and you tape them for 4 to 6 weeks. You take them off when you're in the shower if you want to. And seriously, when I tape my feet, you have to use athletic taping that you can buy at the drugstore. Buy the stuff that's easy to tear. If there's a question, you ask the druggist, and you bring it back if they give you the wrong tape. It has little serrated edges.
Okay.
It's white. It's called strapping tape. You tape your feet every day. You can often leave the tape on for 2 days or even 3 days. Doesn't come off in the shower, and it cleans up nicely, but after 3 days, it has to be removed because the sweat gets underneath it. Keep your feet taped for 6 to 8 weeks. Wear shoes 100% of the time, as close to that as you can get. Give up your heels and then call us back. Chances are very likely that you will have a significant drop in this.
Wow. Okay.
Is she right? Is this going to be with her the rest of her life? Or is she...
Probably on and off. But the fact is, if you tape properly and you take good care of your feet with the shoes and getting rid of the high heels, it'll often work. I've got to recommend one other thing. Do you have any children at all?
Three.
Okay. When your children get married, wear high heels.
Oh, thank you. In another 10 years.
That's it. It's something to look forward to.
How about running now?
Well, I wouldn't run. I wouldn't run until my feet were better. So I would do biking. Biking's fine. Biking is good. Swimming is good. But I would give up running until you're 100% better.
Wow. And
that's what I would do. That's what I would do if I were you. I'd get my pain under control.
Right.
I'd be a good person. Then I'd go from there. And good luck to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for the call. We appreciate it. 800-462-7413. So, Zorba, there's an okay way to tell your honey it's time for a diet?
Well, I can tell from the way you said that how difficult it is. You said okay way. You didn't say foolproof, because the answer is there is no foolproof way. You know, when it comes to situations like this, I'm not the maven. I'm not the person who's got all of the answers. But it's a problem. When you look at Americans, the fact that we've had an explosion in obesity in our society, and you're living with somebody and that person is overweight, how do you kind of nudge them for them? You love them and you're with them. And of course, there are the issues of you don't love me. You tell me I'm overweight. And there's so much emotion attached to the weight. And yet the person wants to lose weight. Not everyone, but most people who are overweight say, I want to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
Some people who are overweight say, I'm fine. I really don't care. I'm overweight. But probably 90%, 95%. It certainly is not 100%. And often the loved one is worried about their health. That's the first input. You know, the first input is, I'm concerned about your weight because I'm concerned about your heart. In other words, use health as the initial entry into the discussion, that's crucial.
Recognizing that this is not really your field of expertise, what are some ways that spouses can talk with their loved ones?
So the first thing you say is, honey, I'm worried about your health. I love you, and I want you to be here for a long time, and I'm concerned about your weight, and how can I help you? How can I help you? And the ways that you can help them is, how can I help you? Maybe you do things as a team. Let's go to the gym together. Let's stop eating the prepared foods at dinner and let's make dinner together. It's a great way. Making dinner together makes a difference. You know, because also you control your food. If you eat prepared foods, you can't control it. Don't nag. Nagging, nobody likes nagging. Don't judge. You're sitting there at a meal and your loved one eats all of the cake and eats the second piece of cake. You really have to turn a blind eye. Because if you nag, all of a sudden, it just becomes an issue. Don't nag, and you can help.
Yeah, but the bottom line, it's still a very difficult
thing. Very touchy, very hard. There's no absolute answer for this. However, if you want your loved one to lose weight, saying nothing also isn't the answer. Not commenting is also not the answer. It's enabling it. It's not the answer. It's just like any other. Some people are addicted to food, and it's not the answer. And often your loved one would like to talk about it, but they don't want to be nagged, and they don't want to be judged, and they don't want to feel like you don't love them. So be be sensitive.
And if you don't have a weight problem and your loved one does, keep the junk food out of the house. You can't
Absolutely.
Eat junk
Good
food
point.
And expect her
Good
not
point.
To.
Good point. You bet. Bring home a bag of Oreos and you can eat one and your loved one finishes the bag.
800-462-7413. To a listener now, Zorba in Norman, Oklahoma. Hello.
Hi, Zorba and Tom.
How can we help?
And my issue is with my left knee. If I just take off running without stretching thoroughly first, for example, from a store to my car in the cold weather, my knee will swell up and get very stiff. I'm not unaccustomed to running, but I'm not an overrunner either, and this happens consistently, once every month or two. And I've seen three doctors now. I'm in the process of getting a referral. It's been difficult. And it stumped all three of them. And they said, well, it's either blood or air in your knee, probably blood.
Mm-hmm. So you've seen three doctors. Now, what sort of imaging studies have they done? X-rays, MRIs?
X-rays and MRIs. Both have come out clean.
Uh-huh.
And there's no pain or anything except when I try to forcefully bend it. But otherwise, it's just stiff, and it's definitely not normal.
So does it actually swell up? I mean, do you visually see it swell up, or does it feel like it swells up?
Yeah, I can visually see it.
Uh-huh. What happens to the range of motion when you do that? Can you fully straighten it out and bend it when you're bending it, or is that decreased?
Yeah, it's very decreased. I can't extend it quite all the way, and then I can't bend it very much at all.
Yeah, I think you need a scope. That's what I think. And let me talk a little bit about MRIs. They're wonderful. I call them smoke and mirrors. Sometimes they tell you what's there, and sometimes they don't, because they're not really visually looking inside. Perfect example happened in my office the other day. I had a patient who had an MRI, and the MRI said there was a major cartilage tear in the knee. He's a guy. He's a soccer kid. He's in his early 20s, 20, 21. Plays for a college team, and I had an MRI, and he had called me up, and he said, what do you think I should do, because he was off at college. And I said, "Come, you need to come back, see a good surgeon." Looked at the surgeon, came back, and they said, well, this MRI looks awful. You've got a whole knee. We've got to reconstruct it. We may have to use cartilage from somewhere else. Opened up the knee, looked at it rather through the scope, and lo and behold, the MRI was wrong. Didn't have everything that was there. In other words, they found nothing compared. They had to do some cartilage repair, but it wasn't as bad as the MRI showed. In a likewise way, the MRI may show nothing, and there may be something there. If your knee is visually swelling up with a reduction in the range of motion, you probably have a cartilage tear, and the MRI just didn't pick it up. That's all. You need a scope. You need to have somebody look inside the knee and see what it is. That's the only way you're ever going to find out. You need an orthopedic surgeon to do it.
Okay.
I don't want to say it's very simple, but the imaging studies, the non-invasive studies haven't shown it. You're a young guy. You want to go, and periodically it swells up. That means there's something irritating inside the knee. Somebody has to look inside the knee and discover it. And when you have the scope, realize you've got to recover from the scope. It's painful, and you've got to do physical therapy afterwards. But I definitely would recommend a scope in your case.
Okay. Do you think surgery is going to be involved eventually?
Well, with a scope, you know, they can do surgery in there. And often what is most likely happening, just from a probability point of view, is that you've got a little piece of cartilage hanging around there. And periodically it gets stuck in the knee and the knee swells up and it's painful and then you can't use it. And what they do is nip and tuck. They take out that piece of cartilage that's hanging around. You probably have a meniscus tear or some other piece of cartilage that's doing that. And they'll do that when they do the scope. They don't open the knee necessarily, but they do it through the scope. And that is the surgery. It's scope surgery.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you so much for the call at 1-800-462-7413. We have callers waiting and a line open for you now at 800-462-7413. On to Jacksonville, Florida now. Hello.
Hello.
What's up?
I also have a running issue.
Oh.
Have been running on and off for probably about 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
And every now and then when I'm running, my legs and or stomach break out into this incredible itch that if I touch it at all, it becomes inflamed and incredibly painful.
Mm.
It usually happens when it's a little bit cooler outside or when I've been inactive for an indefinite period of time.
So you stop and scratch and rub?
If I stop and scratch, it just becomes incredibly inflamed.
Mm-hmm. So this happens in the cold weather. Have you tried changing clothes, different kinds of clothes to wear?
Yes. It seems to have little to do with what I'm wearing and not even necessarily where the clothes are hitting.
Uh-huh. Well, one thing, by the way, just from a clothes point of view or a laundry detergent point of view, which this may not be, is cotton is the least allergic. So once again, if people ever develop any kind of a rash or any kind of an itch, the first thing I see is go to cotton, see what happens with cotton, because cotton can be an issue. When you look from a washing clothes point of view, it's the extra rinse that counts to get the soap out. Sometimes there's a soap residual. If you smell the perfumes that are used in soaps, that's what they do in detergents. You know, when your when your clothes smell clean, often it's the perfume they put in there. And the extra rinse will get rid of it. It doesn't sound like that's your problem, but that's
it. I don't think so, because it's been happening for years.
Right, right. Now, does this happen, do you get cold weather hives when you walk outside? It's cold outside, you walk out, do you get cold weather hives, even if you're not running or exercising? Will you have an itch?
No, just when running.
So this happens once a week, once a month, twice a month? How often?
Sporadically.
Sporadically, yeah. Meaning how often?
Well, it happened about a month ago,
and
before that, it had probably been another couple of months.
Okay, so in other words, you exercise, but doesn't happen every time you exercise.
No.
Okay, only rarely when you exercise.
Right.
Uh-huh. Have you looked at any food relationship?
I was just thinking a diet thing, maybe.
Ah, you see, Tom, you actually is educable.
After all these years sitting across from you, I finally come up with a thought.
Dr. Tom has just wanted to know if there's any diet relationship.
I don't know.
It's something to think about because, once again, you want to. If something happens erratically, it's the hardest thing to find.
Right.
So what you want to do is you want to diary it. So whenever it happens, you want to write down, what did I have the night before? Mm-hmm. What did I eat? Did anything tip this off? Did I go out and drink some red wine? Or did I have a big breakfast? Or did I have a dinner or something the night before? Well, first of all, I don't know what's causing this. I don't have the foggiest idea. Let me state that actually up front. I don't know. I don't have the answer. But let me tell you something that's an interesting side issue with this.
Mm-hmm.
We know that people get hives and they occur sporadically. Mm-hmm. And we don't know why. They can be cold weather hives. Mm-hmm. People go out in cold weather and they itch. And people can have hives when they sweat. They can just have it randomly. Usually, every time they sweat, they get hives. So it may be that you're developing, it's not an allergy to the sweat, it's just part of the response. The problem is, if it happens every time, I tell people, we'll take a Claritin or Zyrtec half an hour before you exercise, and that may get rid of it. But in your case, you're not going to take a pill all the time for something that happens once a month.
I do take Claritin almost every day.
Mm-hmm. Well, you may want to double the Claritin from 10 to 20. Why do you take Claritin?
Just for my regular seasonal allergies.
Mm-hmm. What about when it's not the season?
When I don't take it, actually, I itch.
Oh, well, it's part of that itching. This is part of your allergic response.
Mm.
That's what this is. It's now I take back what I said before. It is connected.
Well, you know, I've had a lot of other runners who have had the same issue.
Well, like I always tell people, you don't know their whole story with other
True.
Runners. So they may have an issue, but it may be a different issue. But getting back to your issue.
Mm-hmm.
Double the Claritin from 10 to 20 milligrams a day.
Mm-hmm.
When it was approved in Europe, it was approved at 40 milligrams a day, but it causes sleepiness. So in this country, they went to 10 milligrams a day, so it wouldn't have any sleepiness. You can take 20 milligrams of generic Claritin cheap when you buy it in a large quantity at the store. Zyrtec is okay. It's actually a little better, but it tends to make some people sleepy. And what I would do is double Claritin or take a Zyrtec and see if that gets rid of it. That's what I would do, because this is probably then part of your overall allergy issues. If you only had seasonal allergies, they'd go away, but you notice you itch all times of the year. Mm-hmm. This is a variation of that. And do what Tom said and see if there's a food that's popping this out.
Okay.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Keep
Thanks
running.
So much for the
Keep
call.
Running.
You said it before I said it, Zorba. I was just
sneaking. No, not at all, Tom.
We have a great recipe coming up. But first, Zorba, let's take a moment to see if we can help out Dave from Clover, Wisconsin. Dave has a problem with his lips. They are constantly chapped, and he can't get any relief. What can he do?
You're constantly chapped. Well, you know what we often give for chapped lips are obviously lip balm, which sort of keeps the moisture inside. That's one thing you can do. You know, people have chapped lips. Sometimes we'll give them a steroid cream to get rid of the swelling. Sometimes there's actually a swelling and inflammation. I would try over-the-counter 0.5% hydrocortisone cream. I'd put it on for 2 weeks to see whether that does it. You have to also then look at the food that you're eating. Hot foods will tend to dry out lips a little bit more. Spicy foods will also tend to dry them out. And short of that, see your doctor to see whether or not this is a dermatological problem.
How about this? More kissing.
More kissing! Absolutely.
If your fingers aren't chapped, type up your question, comment, or tip for the show and send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
More of your calls, some really great research, our medical myth buster, a listener recipe. Lots of good reasons for you to stay tuned here to Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Again, that toll-free number is 800-462-7413, but right now it's recipe time, so let's welcome from St. Louis, Missouri, listener Lisa Ross. Hi, Lisa.
Hi, Tom.
Thanks so much for submitting this recipe. It's intriguing. Lisa's vegetable pancakes. My first reaction was, who wants vegetables in pancakes?
I know, but Tom, there's no tofu in it.
That's a huge upside. Well, how'd you come about developing this recipe?
Well, I actually first got the idea from my best friend's boyfriend my first year in college, which I hesitate to tell you how long ago that was.
Well, you don't have to.
Okay, good. And then I just kind of worked with it, but I've been making it for years now.
Yeah. Well, how did, again, I'm intrigued by this. What did the best friend's boyfriend say? Let's have some vegetables and pancakes, or how did this come about?
Well, hey, this was back in the days of the hippie kind of people. He was...
Wait a minute. You make the hippies sound like Cro-Magnons.
No, I was kind of one of them.
Or Neanderthals. You know,
back
in the days of the Cro-Magnons in front of the cave when you put, you know, the fire on. We talked about vegetables.
No wonder you didn't want to tell us how old you are. You're ancient.
You don't have to tell us the whole story about the hippie people.
It startled me when I realized how long I'd been making the recipe.
Anyway, so he said what? Let's do veggies.
He was vegetarian and he liked to cook. Came up with this idea. I actually don't know if it was his idea originally, but he's the one I got the idea from.
Yeah. Is this a breakfast thing?
No, it's not. It's not sweet. It's not a breakfast thing. It's more of an entree for either lunch or dinner.
Do you remember what the boyfriend looked like?
I do, actually. He was a little scruffy and had dark hair and wore, you know, those are the days where we used to wear blankets draped over us.
I've got it. I've got
the
image.
The recipe is not as weird as it sounds.
I don't think the image is weird. I remember those days. Well, going back. Okay,
yeah. Right.
Lisa's vegetable pancakes. Okay, start out with 3 to 4 cups of vegetables sliced or chopped. Now, what kind of veggies do you use, and do you slice them or chop them?
I made it after I talked to Adam and measured the amount of vegetables, because usually I just chop them up and throw them in, and it's probably more like 4+ cups.
Okay.
So I use red cabbage or purple cabbage, and it's about a quarter to a third of a head of cabbage.
Gives me an idea.
Mm-hmm. And broccoli. Mm-hmm. And I use a head of broccoli. Mm-hmm. And then carrots.
Mm-hmm. Good.
And I use a couple large carrots. Uh-huh. And then about half of a good-sized onion.
Uh-huh.
And I like that combination partly because it's so colorful. and it has a lot of different textures.
Uh-huh. I want to talk a bit about the color. The color is actually important to your body. There's too much beige in the American diet.
Yeah.
If it's all beige, it's
right.
no good.
There's
it's
no nutrition, good. Right?
I always wanted to write a book called Color Coordinate Your Diet and Your Life. You know, the important. But seriously, what happens is with colors come nutrients, carotenoids, vitamins, minerals, phytochemicals, all the things that we actually need. So making a colorful veggie medley in here actually, it makes it a much healthier medley. In all seriousness.
So I like the color and I like the textures. And what I do, I thinly slice the cabbage. I slice the carrots. I chop the broccoli. I use mostly florets, but you can use the stems. So just into bite-sized pieces. I don't dice them up tiny, but just bite-sized pieces. And then I chop the onion.
Sounds great. Perfect. So 4-plus cups of those. 2 cups of flour. And what kind of flour do you use?
I use whole wheat flour.
Whole wheat flour. Mm-hmm. Important. So whole wheat flour. So you have fiber. You're going to have fiber in there. You're going to make it even healthier. And it's going to have the texture of a whole wheat
pancake. It has almost kind of a little bit of a nutty flavor.
Nutty. Yeah, that's right. Whole wheat does give it that nutty flavor. 1 egg beaten?
Yes, and I actually use egg substitute.
Why do you use egg substitute?
Just to make it lower fat. Yeah, you could use an egg. Okay. I don't always have eggs around, but I always have egg substitute around.
Oh, interesting.
You
so,
can
okay.
use either one.
2 tablespoonfuls of honey.
Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I would say 1 to 2, and I use closer to 1. Depends how, if you like a little more sweetness.
Mm-hmm. In our house, we'd do 2.
Yeah.
That's what you do in our house.
Well, the carrots actually add a little sweetness.
They
That's
do.
Another reason I
they
like
do.
Them in there.
They do. But usually it's not enough to satisfy mama. And as we say in our house, if mama ain't happy, ain't nobody happy.
That's right.
1 teaspoon of salt.
Mm-hmm.
Cup of non-fat milk. You use skim milk.
I do. You could use any kind, but I use non-fat.
Yeah, and non-fat milk. And 3 teaspoons of oil. What kind of oil do you use?
I use canola oil, and actually, you don't really need the oil's just for frying them. So if you have a good nonstick skillet and you really want to eliminate the fat, you don't need the oil, but it gives it a nice crispiness on the outside.
No, it sounded like a lot of quantity there. How many does this serve?
I only use a teaspoon at a time for a big pan.
No, I mean the whole recipe. How many?
It makes about 6 pancakes.
Oh,
and they're about 1/2 to 3/4 inch thick. And I haven't measured them, but I'd guess they're about 3 or 4 inches diameter.
So it's a nice size pancake.
Yeah.
And as you say, for the oil, if you don't want to use the oil, get a good Teflon pan and then use nonstick spray on it. Because that we use it. So let's go into the making of the recipe. Lightly steam all the vegetables until they're al dente.
Right. I actually don't steam the onions, but the other ones won't really cook if you start out with them
al dente. I was told by a friend of mine who is Italian, next time you say al dente, I'm going to dent in your head.
That's you got what an he said. Italian lesson.
He said, my Uncle Vito said, I hate it when he says al dente. Tell him al dente or al dente said in too. So it gives me a way of remembering it. Al dente.
Al dente.
It's funny when he said that. Combine the flour, eggs, honey, salt, and milk in a large bowl. Add the vegetables and mix. Heat a small amount of oil in the nonstick skillet over medium heat or just spray it. Pour 1/3 to 1/2 cup portions of the batter into the skillet. Flatten out. Push it down. Flatten it out. Sauté until golden brown and cook through about 5 minutes per side?
Yes, and you actually don't pour it. It makes a really thick batter. It looks almost more like dough, like sticky dough.
Oh, okay.
So you kind of glop it into
and
the
that's
pan.
Why, and that's why you can push it down. I'm thinking about regular pancakes where if you pushed it down, you'd go right through it. Because
it doesn't look like pancake batter at all.
That
it's
really helps.
Thicker.
And tell me, what do you serve it with?
I was wondering that too.
So I serve it with a little either non-fat yogurt or low-fat sour cream with a little soy sauce. Low-sodium soy sauce mixed in on the side, and then you take a bite and dip it in the...
Soy sauce with a little yogurt or sour cream. Sounds great.
Well, how about some pork sausages?
Good old Tom, taking a recipe, and let's add pork to it. Let's add a little sausage. So, well, thank you so much. This is a wonderful recipe. Our nutritional analysis says it's only 230 calories per pancake. That is minimal. It is an extremely low-fat recipe. It has hardly any fat. It has no saturated fat to speak of at all. Fabulous recipe. Thank you, thank you, thank you.
You.
I know that people are going to want to get this and serve this in their house.
I hope they'll enjoy it.
Yeah, Thanks a lot, Lisa.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
For sending us this winning recipe, Lisa gets a free copy of our cookbook, Heart Healthy, Low-Fat, Guilt-Free, and Tasty Recipes from the Kitchen of Zorba Pastor. And if you want to enter our recipe contest, it's easy. Just email your original low-fat recipe to us at
Zorba@WPR.org.
And if you want a copy of today's recipe, visit our website at
ZorbaPastor.org. You can also sign up for our weekly recipe podcast and search all of your favorite Zorba Pastor on your health recipes. That's at ZorbaPastor.org.
Our toll-free number, 800-462-7413. Back to the phones now, Zorba, and a listener in Knoxville, Tennessee. Hello.
Hello, how are you fellas doing?
Fine, how can we help?
I just got diagnosed with hypoglycemia, and I'm not overweight by any means, very active, but one of the things they want me to do is change my diet. And part of it is eating vegetables. I think my body would go into convulsions and I'd twitch.
Wait a minute.
If the Lord wanted me to eat vegetables, I think I'd have a white fuzzy tail. But I just can't do it. Is there supplements that I can take instead of actually eating
this stuff?
Well, wait a minute.
You've got to be eating some vegetables.
Oh, no.
You don't eat one vegetable?
Not since I grew up and was able to make my own decisions.
Wow.
Well, no. So, we have somebody who is the opposite of a vegan.
Yeah.
Right? It's the exact opposite of a vegetarian who eats no eggs, no cheese or anything else. So we have vegan on one side. So you're not overweight. So we don't have to worry about that. But your diet is probably fairly high in fact, tell me about your cholesterol. What's it like?
Oh, it's beautiful. It was like 182.
So you don't have a cholesterol problem. You basically eat you're a meat and potatoes guy, and you eat cheese and dairy food. I take it like that. Blood pressure is good?
My blood pressure is within normal range, but my blood sugar would dip down to 50.
Well, a couple things. First of all, vegetables are not necessarily going to do that, except veggies, if you eat complex carbohydrates. You eat potatoes?
I'm supposed to watch how much I eat of that.
Uh-huh. But you do eat potatoes.
Yes, sir.
With the skin on it?
A couple times a week.
With the skin on it. Not with the skin on it.
I'm asking about a half a cup of butter.
Half a cup of butter when you eat the potatoes.
That's flavoring. That's seasoning.
Okay. So eat potatoes without the skin. Fiber may help you. So the answer is a fiber supplement in the form of a pill that you can take may help your hypoglycemia.
Right.
Also, eating small amounts throughout the day. Do you just have three big meals?
I usually eat twice a day, and that's one of the things they want me to increase it.
Yeah, that's it. What's your first meal of the day? Breakfast?
Breakfast, and then I eat supper pretty late.
And what's your typical breakfast?
My typical breakfast is two waffles, a couple eggs, some bacon and sausage.
and your typical dinner?
Oh, my land. Last night I had 19-ounce prime rib, mashed potatoes, french fries with cheese on them, and that was it.
Well, I've got to tell you something. You're not overweight. Your cholesterol is great. Your blood pressure is fine. You have a little low blood sugar throughout the day because you're basically not eating a bit throughout the day. You know, I'd just take some fiber tablets and call it a day. That's just about it. If you're not, as you said, as soon as you can make the decision you weren't going to eat veggies and you're not going to eat them for the rest of your life, you just need some calories throughout the day. So I'd recommend maybe a little bit. You need some calories. Eat some cheese throughout the day or something like that. That's what my recommendation is. Every time you go to a doctor or anyone else, they're going to say your diet is awful, but your cholesterol is fine. Enjoy life. You don't smoke cigarettes, right?
No, sir.
Yeah, well, that's, and you're not overweight. I think you're doing okay, actually.
You're going to be in the Smithsonian when you die for it. Being able to live that and have that kind of diet and just stay healthy. Do you understand this, Irma?
Good genes. That's what it is. Do you have longevity in your family?
Yes, sir, I have. My grandparents both lived over 100. So
You know what? Enjoy it. Have fun. Enjoy the life. Forget the veggies.
And thanks for the call.
I appreciate your time.
Bye-bye. Zorba, you'll remember not too long ago we were trying to figure out how you have one egg when reducing ingredients in a recipe. You were basically stumped, but suggested using a small egg. Well, our listeners didn't take too long to flood our inbox with these suggestions. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Their collective answer was to beat the egg first and then use only half of the mixture in the recipe. Another healthier suggestion from our listeners was to use egg beaters in lieu of the egg.
Good ideas. Egg beaters would be really easy because you just pour it out. But have you ever tried to separate out an egg in a cup? You know, it's kind of, you know, sticky.
After it's beaten, you could just use half.
Yeah, that's true. You could do it. Yeah. Just use half of it. I like that idea. I was stumped. That is right. Beat the egg. Beat the egg.
And can keep those tips coming. Send them to us in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
We have some more research coming up. More of your calls and our medical myth buster. Stick around here on Zorba Pasture on Your Health from PRI. Public Radio International. I'm Tom Clark here with Family Doc Zorba Pastor on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. 800-462-7413 is our toll-free number. But before we get back to the phones, Zorba, interesting research on retirement and work. Is it good for us or not good for us to retire at 65 or 70 years old? Does working longer help us or hurt us?
Well, what do you think, Tom?
I would guess that it's six of one and a half dozen of another, a little bit of you, depending on who you are and what the work is.
Right. It's kind of a mixed bag. And when we look at the data, it's rather interesting because in these economic times, there are a lot of people who put off retirement. First of all, we have people who retire in their 50s and in their early 60s. And then you have folks who say, well, wait a minute, I don't have enough money. I have to go back to work. So there are many issues. Some people like to work. My dad is the perfect example. He worked until he was 87. Had a stroke and died. Mm-hmm. That's the way to go. But he loved it. And he loved sales and doing things. And he had enough money. But he said, if I sit around, I'll watch television and play cards. And how interesting is that? And I can only golf so much. And it becomes boring. And so it was mentally stimulating. That's one type of job.
Right.
Or it's socially stimulating. It's another type of job. It gets you out to do things. It gives you some structure in your life. But then you have people who have to work because they have to work. They haven't saved enough. They can't make it. Or they have a physical or mental sort of disability. They may not cognate and think as well. And that's a different issue. And some European studies show that Europeans who have to work appear to have poor health, especially the men. But when you mine that data, a lot of those people are engaged in manual jobs. Yeah. So they're still working in a warehouse and they're 70. Well, that's a totally different job than if you become, you know, a Walmart greeter, which is socially maybe interesting for you and get you out of the house.
Yeah, you're 70, 75 years old doing some sort of rote work. You've got kids and grandkids, and you'd rather be having nice vacations, and that's not good.
No, and so the issues are, you know, you've got these two issues. So first of all, what's the issue for people who have to work? Well, the people who have to work have to look at a job that is non-manual, that's good, that gives them enough money to survive because they have to add to their Social Security and retirement if they have it. That's one issue. But there are other people who want to work, and for those people, working is very good. And I have people every day, once a day, once, twice a week, they go, well, how long are you going to keep doing it? To me, and I don't consider myself to be old at all, but they wonder if I'm going to be staying working.
Well, now, look, what would you suggest? I have to work this job 1 hour every week. Should I keep on doing it, or when should I retire?
Well, I think you just have to continue to use it. Now, I know it's hard physical work. You know, you got to, you know, dial those phone numbers and, you know, come into the station. I know it's mentally very challenging for you, Tom, but for you, staying on the job is great for your longevity and the longevity of this show.
800-462-7 1-800-273-4413. A caller now in Springbrook, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi. I ran across this book by Sally Fallon titled Nourishing Traditions. And ever since reading the part about milk in her, I haven't really drank any milk anymore. And I've come to the conclusion that from what I've read in there, that drinking raw milk from a cow that has only eaten grass and hay is much better for you than drinking pasteurized milk off from the supermarket shelf. After reading this, it's kind of turned my whole worldview of milk upside down. I was wondering what Zorba thought about pasteurized milk versus raw milk.
Mm-hmm. Well, raw milk is an interesting issue. First of all, it's dangerous. That's the issue. The issue is when we didn't pasteurize milk, tuberculosis, among other things, which is present in cows, was spread. So a lot of kids back in the 1900s, pre-pasteurization, had TB of the spine, called Pott's disease, and they'd have it at the age of 1 year of age. And so they'd have a tubercular infection of their spine, and it was awful, absolutely awful. And there are a number of other things that can be spread through non-pasteurization. So, you know, if you live on the farm and you know the cow and you drink it out of the cow, you run a little risk, but it's totally different than if you go and buy it from somebody else's cow because you don't know what it is. And that's why there are laws in every single state in the union against raw milk, because it's definitely a health problem. There's no doubt about it. Now, let's look at the vitamins and minerals. Yes, when you heat milk up to 175, 180, whatever the degree is for pasteurization, you definitely destroy enzymes. You destroy some vitamins that are there in minerals, which is why I tell everybody, take a vitamin tablet every day. Now you've answered that question. You need a vitamin every day, take a vitamin tablet. And if you want to take other supplements for vitamins that may be lost there, take it. Then you don't have to think about it. In other words, you've got your daily supply. You don't need the vitamins from milk. You can get them from fruits and veggies. Very important. Colorful fruits and vegetables. If you want to have more vitamins, be a juicer and juice fruits and juice veggies, especially carrots, you know, which are loaded with carotene. So carrots are a great thing. So get your vitamins from somewhere else, and then you don't have to think about the milk issue. Now, what about calcium? Calcium is chalk. I mean, that's what it is. When you get a calcium tablet, it's basically remilled chalk. It's a mineral. It is not destroyed in any way, shape, or form when you pasteurize. It does nothing absolutely at all to the calcium. You can go and mine calcium and eat the mined calcium by chalk and eat it and chew it, and your body will absorb it. So the calcium is a non-issue. So now, do you eat cheese or yogurt, or have you given up all dairy products?
No, I haven't. I eat a lot of cheese and a lot of yogurt.
Yeah, and so you don't have to drink milk. You can have cheese and yogurt. But I'm against raw milk unless it's your cow on your farm. Different issue. You have control over it. And if you have one cow or two cows, you test the herd, or a whole bunch of cows. That's a different issue. A lot of farmers in Wisconsin, drink milk from their own milk, but 99% of them pasteurize it at home. So they're also frightened. So I like to take my cue from my local farmer, because my local farmers usually know what's up, often much more than I do, when it comes to milk. So,
okay, great.
Thank you so much.
You bet.
Bye-bye. 800-462-7413. Zorba time once again for our medical myth buster. Today's myth comes from the wonderful world of grapes. We've discussed the heart-healthy benefits of drinking wine in small amounts on the show many times before. We all know that wine comes from grapes. So, is it a myth that grape juice will have the same benefits as wine?
It is a myth. It is a myth. Grape juice does not have the same benefits in wine. Now, it has a resveratrol, which is the chemical that we think is very important in there, but it does not have the alcohol. And alcohol probably works, we don't know quite why, but probably works by relaxing the small arterioles, medium-sized arterioles that are responsible for high blood pressure. It may work on something called the endothelium. The endothelium is the lining of the blood vessels that we think are very important in high blood pressure, or it may just relax. We don't know, but we know that it's the alcohol that's the issue. A glass of beer works as well as red wine. That's what the data show. And frankly, a shot of vodka works as well as red wine. It may not be as romantic, but you could say, hi, honey, I'm going to have my shot of vodka before dinner. And frankly, it's the same as a glass of wine, a glass of beer. One shot, one drink a day is fine. More than two drinks are not fine. For men, for guys, you can probably have two. For women, you probably have to limit yourself to one.
Uh-huh. Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Send it along in an email to
Zorba at WPR.org.
Our number, 800-462-7413. 1-800-462-7413. And a listener with us now, Zorba, in Westport, Connecticut. Hi.
Hi.
How can we help?
I would be interested in hearing Zorba's opinion about soy products. I've been a vegetarian for about 20 years. I do eat fish and some dairy, but when I cut out meat and fowl, I thought I had found the magic bullet in soy, but over the last couple of years, I've been reading articles that are a little bit scary about soy.
What and sort of stuff are you reading?
I'm reading things like in the processing of soy, some chemicals might be added or some substances in the soy are activated that might not be so healthy. The Weston A. Price Foundation is a school of nutrition that says that soy is actually dangerous. There are high levels of things like phytic acid in soy. So I wondered how much soy is healthy, what types of soy products are okay to eat, and whether I should bring in more alternatives like beans and legumes and cut out some soy.
Well, I've got some opinions about this. First of all, it's quite interesting. It reminds me when you talk about the foundation that you just mentioned. What was the name of it? The Weston A. Price.
Uh-huh.
It reminds me of a book that was published many years ago called The Nuts Among the Berries, and it was about food fallacy in America. The Nuts Among the Berries. And then there's a book that came out about a year ago about the history of vegetarianism throughout the ages, from around the 1500s through now, and about the rise and fall of vegetarianism. It rises and it falls, and the guilt associated with it and the killing of animals. There are a lot of politics involved with vegetarian issues that are not new. They've been going on for a minimum, he documented, the last about 500 years. Then I think about the French. And the French think of food as something that's luscious. That's the word that they would use, a luscious part of life. And we think in America, food is a medicinal thing. So we've got the medicinal viewpoint of what's right and what's wrong with food, and the French think, well, what does it taste like? it's a totally different viewpoint. And did you enjoy the meal, and did you spend a couple of hours, and did you sit down, and what wine did you pair with the food that you had? And I just mention this because when you read a lot about any particular subject, you'll find out there's a bunch of people on both sides, and it doesn't cost anything to put up a website and make a foundation and collect some money and go to Hawaii and have a good time with the money you've collected.
Yeah.
And give seminars. Soy is great, period. Soy is great. Now, if you're worried about the processing of soy, buy the beans in an organic health food store. So there are organic soybeans, and process it yourself. Very simple. Take it, boil it, process it. There are many, many different ways. There are a lot of good web ways out there so you can make a textured soy yourself at home. And that answers the processing issue. Now, what about processing and chemicals? Do they use them? Absolutely. There's no doubt about them. I mean, and they do added value because you don't have to do it at home. And so you pay for that added value. If you're worried about the processing and chemicals, you've got to buy them at a health food store. They look at the processing and you pay a premium price because they're looking at it and they're the ones that are going to take more value. Now, is soy bad for you? I don't see any good scientific evidence, zero, that the phytoestrogens are bad for you, because we actually think the phytoestrogens are good for you. So here it is. For years, we've been talking about get soy because it's better for phytoestrogens. Then you've got some organization out there that says, wait a minute, phytoestrogens are actually bad for you. They're not good for you. So you can't win, because as soon as you have, you know, as soon as you say something is good, some person, a nut among the berries, gets up and says, no, phytoestrogens are bad for you. They cause holes in your brain, and they increase estrogen in your bloodstream, and that leads to breast cancer and ovarian cancer, but we thought they were good for you, and these are the right ones. So you can get very confused. But the main bottom line is, if you're only eating soy, that isn't good. You do want a variety of proteins. So you're right, more legumes, more beans, and not only soy. That is actually good advice. But the Weston A. Price Foundation, forget it. I mean, who is Weston A. Price and what is he selling? He's selling something. Or maybe Weston is a woman. Maybe I'm wrong. But anyway, that's... I have an opinion, as you can see.
You're very passionate about it.
Well, then, you know what happens is you can't win in America. Yeah. But I like the French idea. I have a question for you. Do you like what you're eating?
I do, yeah.
Enjoy it.
Okay.
And sit down and have a glass of red wine with it. And turn off the computer. Sometimes it's just like the TV.
Except to go to your website.
Except to go to my website at zorbapastor.org, where you'll find great information and irreverent fun.
Thanks a lot for the call.
Thanks so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
800-462-7413. Zorba, we have time for one last nutty question from the Zorba Pastor on your health inbox. This one comes to us from a listener named J.S., who writes, "My wife and I both enjoy nuts and eat them daily. Since these nuts are a bit expensive, my wife buys them in bulk. If I pick a small handful of almonds every day, as my wife does, I find my share of the nuts are gone long before my wife's, since my handfuls are larger than hers. Should I be eating more of the nuts than my wife in order to receive the equivalent nutritional value since I am bigger, or should we eat about the same?"
Well, we've got a deeper question here. Why are they keeping track of how many nuts they eat out of the same bulk container? Now, that's the real issue. I don't think you should do that. You buy your nuts, she buys her nuts,
separate but equal packages of nuts in the house. They buy the nuts together.
Wait a second. It's a family issue. I recommend that this is pillow talk, where you sit down with your wife just before you go to sleep and say, "Honey, I've got something really important to tell you. We've got to discuss the nut problem in our house." That's how you do it. Otherwise, you'll go nutty over this.
He sees this as a nutritional question.
Yes, he does. And Americans see their food as a nutritional issue, and that's often their excuse for eating more. Yes, you should have a smaller amount of nuts. Keep your marriage safe by eating exactly the same number of nuts as your wife. Let's go beyond how many calories you're getting from the nuts and save the marriage.
Here you go. She gets the handful of nuts and feeds him.
Absolutely. You got it, baby. We solved the problem.
If you've got your hands full with a lifestyle question, we'd love to hear it. Send it along in an email to
Zorba@WPR.org.
See you next week, Zorba.
A pleasure, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our recipe podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org.
Don't forget, you can bug our producer anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's produced by Adam Friedrich. Brad Kohlberg is our technical director, with assistance from intern Ann Tenna. Charles Monroe Kane is the executive producer. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, expecting your company on the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
National support for Zorba Pastor on Your Health comes from the AED Superstore, helping people save lives with Philips HeartStart automated external defibrillators for business, school, travel, and home. Available at AEDSuperstore.com. Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 1108Z.
PRI, Public Radio International.